Today, we're sharing a resident interview with Katrina Ernie that is a special episode in partnership with our podcast, Biophilic Solutions. Katrina not only lives at Serenbe, but runs marketing for the Biophilic Institute that is headquartered at Serenbe, and she's also in charge of putting on the annual Biophilic Leadership Summit that's happening next week, October 11th and 12th. We're going to hear her Serenbe story, plus get a taste of what to expect at the summit that is going virtual this year. And we have a discount code just for our podcast listeners, so stick around. And let's get to our interview with Katrina.
I had a lot of friends being like, oh my God, you'll love it. The restaurants are great. You have to go. And I got here and I was like, this place is amazing.
Hey, Jennifer.
Hey, Monica.
How are you today?
I'm great. It's a beautiful fall day in New York City. How are you?
It's good. It's cooling off here too. We have a special guest today.
I cannot wait to talk to our very special guest. It's kind of like a little behind the scenes for us, isn't it?
It is a little behind the scenes. You're going to get behind the scenes on the Biophilic Institute and the Leadership Summit, which is a week from today when this is dropping. It's going to be October 11th and 12th. And we have Katrina Ernie. And Katrina just got married.
Yes. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Thank you. And welcome to the podcast. Katrina's usually behind the scenes. She is our producer and she runs the Biophilic Leadership Summit. So we're bringing her in to get a little behind the scenes of like, what is going to happen next week and why should we be showing up to that virtual summit?
Exactly. Let me tell you. So the Biophilic Leadership Summit is this really cool event historically where people have come to Serenbe, all these leaders in the biophilic movement, and given presentations and had breakout discussions and networking opportunities all around this growing field. And it's been this opportunity for them to really connect with each other, to meet new people, for students to meet with them. And so my background with the Biophilic Leadership Summit is I came on in literally March of 2020.
perfect timing.
Perfect timing to basically lead the summit, which was supposed to happen in April of 2020. And of course, we ended up having to cancel. And we pushed to this year, hoping that we would be able to have the summit in person. And of course, the Delta variant had other plans. So we quickly pivoted to virtual, which I think will end up being great because we've gotten a lot of people from all over the country that probably wouldn't have otherwise been able to come. So really what happens with, or what will happen at the virtual summit is we'll have a series of speakers who are going to be discussing land use and infrastructure. Our theme is land and water. And basically they're just going to talk about all of these applications of biophilia, how we can really scale biophilia from something that's sort of small into something that we use every day in urban spaces throughout the country and throughout the world.
I love it.
Yeah, me too. I just get excited because Katrina, you've been like such a driving force for us behind the scenes to get such great guests on our podcast. And some of these guests are going to be at the summit as well, correct? Like virtually and in person, correct?
Yes. Yeah, so, well, it's all virtual. But we've got some really exciting people who have been listening to the podcast will definitely recognize. So we have Bill Browning. He was our guest on episode number 2. He is the co-founder of Terrapin Bright Green, which is a green building consultancy. And he's like the expert on biophilic design, principles, why we feel so good when we're in spaces that have been designed with these principles in mind.
When you look up the word biophilic design, you like, I think Bill Browning right there.
It's just articles about Bill Browning. I mean, truly, like he is the expert. So he is someone who I'm really excited to hear speak. And he's going to be talking about basically how you scale biophilia from, you know, a room in your house all the way to, you know, urban planning and major cities. So he will be really exciting. Another Another person who will be speaking is Drew Lanham, who I'm so excited about.
Love Drew.
Yeah, he was incredible. He is a professor of wildlife ecology at Clemson and has written extensively all about the intersection of race and nature and how ethnicity sort of informs how we view nature. He wrote that incredible article, 9 Rules for the Black Bird Watcher, and his book, The Home Place, which is just, you know.
Yeah.
Which so I believe that, that Tim Beatley recommended to us, right? Who's the director of Biophilic Cities Project, who's on our board. And Drew was incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. He was a Tim recommendation. So thank you, Tim.
It was hard. We couldn't like stop talking to him. So I remember we're like, okay, we have to stop the podcast. It's going over. But yeah, I could have talked to him all day. So I'm excited that he's going to be a speaker this year.
Yes, definitely.
Well, and Katrina, all of the speakers, we're going to be able to have sort of a Q&A and have some engagement with the audience after each of their talks. So it's not just, you know, watching them or listening to them, but we really get to sort of dig in to their topics and ask questions and really learn from them. Because I think of this summit as a very educational, you know, not only for, you know, the sort of policymaker or city planners or students, but for the general public, you know, even though these topics may sound a little wonky, I think they're super important because, as you know, all of us always talk, like, we need biophilia to sort of really be embraced by the general public to think about how we're going to move forward to get to a net zero future. We have to honor and like love and understand how nature is integrated in our lives. So I'm super excited that you're everybody that you've curated for this summit.
Thank
so who
you.
Else do we have?
Okay. Well, so next up, and I actually think that this sort of goes to what you were just talking about, but we have, Jacqueline Patterson from the NAACP. She's their senior director of climate and environmental justice. We had an incredible episode with her, just talking about the intersections of all these different social issues and how climate is essentially a threat multiplier for all of these different issues. So kind of to your point, Monica, like the theme is really land use and infrastructure and scaling these principles. But I think when you have people like Jackie and Drew, who are sort of part of the conversation, you can just see how all of these social systems sort of work together and how it all impacts each other. And it is so intersectional that when you're talking about green building, that's great. But like, what are the social implications of that? And so I think it is cool to have all of these people in conversation with one another on these various topics. So the other person, go ahead.
No, go.
The other person who our listeners might recognize is Jeff Catch from Rodale. Yeah. So he'll be speaking about regenerative agriculture and how we can scale regenerative agriculture. nationwide, which I think is something that people are typically very skeptical about. And his point is sort of that we shouldn't be, that this is the future and this is the way it's going. And it really has the ability to heal some of the worst problems in our society is just making the shift to a regenerative model. So he'll be great.
Yeah, Jeff is amazing. Yeah. And he has a really incredible story, his own personal story, how he got here. I don't know if he'll share that, but I feel like he may have shared a little bit of that on our podcast. But, you know, John Piotti is also going to be here, I saw on the list, who's the president of American Farmland Trust. So it's such a phenomenal bookend with Jeff, because we have to save the land, right? We have to protect it in order to get regenerative farming on top of it. And one of the things that I've been, you know, like reading about so much is sort of land sinks, like how land can be a carbon, you know, sink. And we all know how important it is to sort of not only, you know, stop releasing carbon, but also how do we like sequester it? And, and both of those things, American Farmland Trust and Rodale, are both, you know, at the forefront of making those, you know, I don't know if that's like the term they would use, but like the IPCC, like land sinks are super, super important of like, how do we have healthy soil? And it starts with conserving the land, right? Protecting the land.
when protecting farmers. I mean, they're really mm-hmm. like kind of the same or two sides of the same coin mm-hmm. in a way. Yeah. So I think it'll be, you're right. It will be really interesting to hear them sort of in conversation yeah. with each other.
Well, and we had John's, you know, American Frontline Trust, Beth was on, who was the VP of programs, and talked about the programs and female farmers and sort of the work that she's doing. But it'll be really interesting to hear from John, like what their big goals are, because, you know, the statistics of how much farmland we lose every day is like kind of mind blowing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. really. That it's when we were jarring. Talking to Beth, yeah, like really shocked me because I didn't realize the real massiveness of like, oh, I had no idea we were losing so much farmland every day. So like, but her like brought it back to like, how can we then protect the farmer, which I love. So these conversations are so very moving and helps us, I think, move the needle to this biophilic movement that we're mm-hmm. always talking about.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Monica, what were you going to say? Sorry, I interrupted you.
I'm love to hear. Keep going. Katrina.
All right. Well, so those are the guests that I think our listeners might be more familiar with. We also have Alfred Vick, mm-hmm. aka Alfie, who is a professor of environmental ethics at the University of Georgia. He is really interesting. He's a LEED certified architect who also works pretty extensively on Native American studies. So his research really focuses on green infrastructure and sustainable design, but he also integrates like native plant communities and Native American ethnobotany into his work. And I think that's really going to be the focus of what he talks about in his presentation on Monday, the 11th, which is actually Indigenous Peoples Day. So that it's very exciting that we have him on our schedule that day.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think that's great. And, you know, immediately when we realized that it was going to be on the 11th and 12th, and that was Indigenous Persons Day, we were like, oh my God, we have to have Alfie talk and talk about the importance.
Yeah.
And really bringing that back up to the forefront, because we can learn so much from the Native Americans on how they honored the land and resources.
And this traditional mm-hmm. knowledge. I think it's so important. Mm-hmm. And to have, I think, someone who can really speak to the architecture and the infrastructure side of mm-hmm. things, but with this lens of traditional absolutely. Ecological knowledge. I mean, that's sort of mm-hmm. incredible. Mm-hmm. I'm super excited about that.
Yeah,
me too.
So we also have Nina Marie Lister. She is a professor and the graduate director of the School of Urban and Regional Planning at Ryerson University, mm-hmm. which is in Toronto, Canada. And she's also the director of their ecological design lab. And that's basic. I mean, I think of it, you know, and she can correct me if I'm wrong. I think of it a little bit like a think tank, where they are really like looking at strategies and practices that will solve sort of sustainability issues, within cities, and then sort of how we can rethink and implement these strategies in order to have sort of a improved relationship with nature in cities. Like how do we think about nature within these dense urban spaces? That's sort of what she is focusing on. So she's going to be great. Really interesting. Robin Grossinger, he is mm-hmm. a senior scientist at the San Francisco Estuary Institute. Which again, I think of as another sort of one of these think tanks. It's comprised of like all these scientists who really are working in their own way to define environmental problems and then mm-hmm. advance public debate through science and supporting solutions that support the environment, support sustainable urban planning. Mm-hmm. And his focus is really on how do we reintegrate natural processes within city landscapes. So these landscapes that have been heavily modified by mm-hmm. people, like how do we, it's already happened, right? So how do we sort of reintegrate nature into those cities? Yeah. It's not about, oh, I'm going to take this undeveloped plot of land and I'm going to make it a perfectly sustainable city. It's like, well, we already have these cities. So how do we make them?
Right.
I can't wait for that because I think as I'm looking out my window, in New York City, how do we then implement those programs to make us more, not just green, but more understanding of the natural landscape that is here or wherever? And how does that impact each and every one of us? And how do we then grow awareness around that? And Monica, I interrupted you once again.
No. Oh, listen, hey, this is a conversation between all of us. But I think I recall that Robin had really worked on and advised on the restoration strategies, I think, for the San Francisco Bay, the Sacramento and San Joaquin Delta, and then the urban landscapes of Google's campuses, and then also a bunch of rivers throughout California, which obviously is really interesting to me because that's where I grew up. And so that whole area, I'm sort of fascinated to sort of hear what's going on out in San Francisco as a former.
Yeah. San Francisco would be a great case study because I feel like it's really a city that's putting some of these things into practice. I mean, I'm just thinking about Tim's episode where he said San Francisco was the first city to like mandate glass that's safe for birds or that.
Yes.
They're really like thinking about these things and integrating them. So yeah, I'm excited to hear more about San Francisco.
Yeah, I feel like these big cities, at one of the leadership summits that we had in person a few years back, we had, and I'm not sure what her title was, but I think she was running like city planning for Washington, D.C. And I learned from her. And again, some of this our audience may know already, but, you know, it had the most green roofs of any city. I think it's like required. And so, you know, when cities set policy, you know, it can not only educate everybody that it's possible, it can also bring the price down by, you know, expanding these solutions. And then, you know, obviously demonstration. And so I'm super excited to hear from Robin about, you know, the work that he's done and probably ask some questions of how it can scale to other cities. Cause that really is the big theme, right? How do we scale biophilic solutions? And that's something that we try and get to the heart of, you know, with the podcast, but the summit, the annual summit is so exciting because like the people who are really out there doing it, we can dig in and everybody can learn from them. And speaking of, I feel like you also have a really great guy out of the UK who works on nature capital, which I'd love you to explain for us.
Yeah. So Nick Grayson, he is the climate change and sustainability manager for the Birmingham City Council. It's Birmingham, UK, not Birmingham, Alabama. and I think he is really sort of an expert on this concept of nature capital, which is really quantifying how implementing more nature, more resiliency, reintegrating nature into the city, the way that it can really bring down costs for a city government. So I think, you know, I don't think this was him, but I read an article about London, and London, I think, has a really good tree cover. And again, I mean, London's a wealthy city, so we can look at like wealthy cities versus cities with fewer resources, but they have really good tree cover. And there was a study that was like their tree cover saved them like £1 billion on energy costs.
Wow. Yeah.
These things aren't just sort of valuable for their own sake. I mean, they are like,
they're,
you want
nice
more nature.
And
they're not nice to have. It's not an amenity. Like it has real tangible benefits.
And Jennifer, you were just listening to somebody yesterday. Was it talking about DNA and
epigenetics?
Yeah, epigenetics. Yeah. Thank you. Tell us a little bit about that.
Spaces and places. Dr. Carmona was speaking about this, and he was a former general surgeon, surgeon general. Sorry, my words are backwards today. But he was talking about how, you know, places are beautiful. Like you just said, Katrina, like, oh, wow, this is really pretty. But when we are in a place like a home or an office or when we're in a space, that structure, the things around us actually affect our genes. So we're all living organisms when we're in touch with nature. So it all has an impact on our genes. So yes, okay, wow, it's pretty, but oh my gosh, I feel good. So when you feel good in a space, it changes our immune system. It, you know, balances our sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system. And we are in a different place in our bodies, and our genes are receptors to all that around us. And it makes us well or unwell. And it's just like, oh my God, you're, of course. So again, Katrina, like you were saying, like, this can be great for those with means and money. So how do we then bring that to places that need that? Mm-hmm. How do we teach that into low income places? And how do we then get society into a place where we are more ethical in how we build structures, and knowing that we are completely surrounded by places that can make us well or unwell? And it's all about nature. Mm-hmm. It's kind of mind blowing when you think about it.
Yeah. And right? Everybody should be able to have access to it. So that's part of it. Right. And I think, you know, cities are really the number one place right now to think about, because so many people live in cities, and there are people, mm-hmm. more and more people are flocking to cities. And even though, you know, there's been this sort of like, exit from cities, or at least the media is covering it that way, and we're seeing that, you know, people are coming to, you know, suburbs or exurbs and rural, which I think is huge, but the majority of people are still living in cities. So how do we make cities more livable? And I think it's going to be really interesting to hear from Nick about that.
Well, and can I put something in there too? Like, I think they said by 2050, 70% of the population be living in large scale cities. 2050, 70% of people will be living in cities.
Amazing.
And we've got to do something about that. We have to fix. Well,
and it can't just be, you know, these wealthy pockets with beautiful tree lined streets. You know, it has to be, it has to be something we integrate throughout the entire landscape. And I think, you know, I think we all want to say, well, like, nature, how do you put a dollar value on it? Like, it's just so intrinsically good. But I think it's something where I think if you can prove that that these strategies are saving you a lot of money in the long term, I mean, I think that really gets people to pay attention.
Yeah. Well, and
money, our mental health, so much more.
And I don't know if I've mentioned it before, maybe off the podcast, but I read a really great book. I'm in a climate book club on Clubhouse on Saturdays. And Mark Carney wrote an amazing book called Value. And it's sort of a play on value, meaning like our values, like what do we value? And then putting a dollar amount on those things. And one of the great examples that he gave in the book was, he's like, you know, why do we value Amazon, the company, not to pick on them, but I will, you know, more than we value the Amazon rainforest. Like, we don't value the rainforest until we tear all the trees down, and now we're using it to, you know, grow crops or graze cattle. And we've actually denuded it, and we've taken the value away, but only then do we place a value on it after we've kind of like destroyed it. Which I thought was a really, for me at least, like really like flipped a switch in my head of, yikes. You know? So how do we, So that's just a book recommendation.
And I mean, like, speaking of Amazon, and again, like, not to pick on them too much, but I think so many of our issues have to do with short-term thinking. So we value Amazon because, like, I can order something on Amazon and I can get it tomorrow.
Totally.
You know, but I think if we would think about these things in longer terms and sort of in generational terms, I think Tim Beatley, again, someone who really talked to us about this in his episode, we would be so much better off. And I think so many of our speakers at the summit are really thinking about
the long term.
So Katrina, the other thing is, there's going to be some breakout sessions, right? And I don't know. Some of those are being finalized. You know, some might be sort of crowdsourced from the attendees. So, you know, we really encourage sign up for the virtual. We tried to make it really affordable. What are the prices, Katrina?
So the regular rate is $120. If you are affiliated with a nonprofit organization, that rate goes down to $95. And then for students, the rate is $50.
Right. And we're going to do a podcast code too, right?
Yes.
We're going to do Biophilic Solutions and you can get it for, I think, almost 40% off at $75. Anybody who listens gets a special opportunity and do it because, you know, we'll probably be asking you questions before mm-hmm. and during the summit to see what kind of deeper conversations you want to have. And there will be an opportunity each day to do that. Right. Anything else you want to share? Or?
Yeah. I mean, I think just the breakout sessions, like we are really trying to retain that networking piece mm-hmm. of the in-person summit. I mean, we are really keeping our fingers crossed for in-person next year. I think the breakouts are a great way to really engage one-on-one with some of these top thinkers in the field of biophilia.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the system we're using is going to have chats and
it's
a way to engage. And there's going to be what is the virtual like room that they've created? And I don't know. So it'll be a lot of fun. And I just think it's an amazing opportunity where we were a little worried because we love the in-person. It's so intimate mm-hmm. and we get to take walks and be outdoors and, you know, be in nature at Serenbe. But I think that this is actually going to be an opportunity to reach more people. And as you made a point, like, you know, maybe, you know, Nick wouldn't have been able to come over from the UK, you know, due to everything that's going on, but now or individuals. So we're super excited. Tell your friends, join us. It's going to be a lot of fun, October 11th and 12th, and use the code Biophilic Solutions. And you can go to both of our websites, the podcast and the Biophilic Institute and the Biophilic Leadership website. And we'll put it in the show notes. So I don't know, come join us, right?
Yeah.
So Katrina, I wanted to ask you, because we're going to play this on Serenbe Stories as well, that podcast. And that podcast, we typically do a deep dive with residents to find out how they got to Serenbe, what they're doing now, you know, what their favorite things are. So I'm going to ask you a quick little question, because not only do you run the summit and produce our podcast and do all the social for it, but you're a resident of Serenbe. So tell us just like real quick how you got to Serenbe and what's your Serenbe story?
Do you share?
Okay. So I started coming to Serenbe like 4 years ago because my now husband, as of less than a week ago, was living here when we met. And I had been here one time when Serenbe was brand new. And I just, you know, I did not have the vision. I was like, what is this place? So he told me he lived there and I was like, okay, that's interesting. You know, I'll come. I had a lot of friends being like, oh my God, you'll love it. The restaurants are great. You have to go. And I got here and I was like, this place is amazing. So then, you know, we got more serious and we were kind of back and forth for a while. And then in early 2020, I started working for Serenbe marketing and just doing all kinds of things, managing different social accounts, really just trying to help out where I can. But one of the things that I started doing was working on the Biophilic Institute. So managing the social, running the summit, producing the podcast, which has been so much fun. It's one of my favorite parts of my job. And I love it. I mean, I love working on biophilia and just becoming more familiar with biophilia.
And you guys live in the modern neighborhood and you guys had what we call these like amazing little homes called the shotguns. Mm-hmm. But then you guys built a cottage. So was that like kind of a fun process or?
It was so much fun.
Oh, good.
So we actually went under contract on the house that we live in now on the day we were supposed to get married in 2020.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Oh God.
So we kind of felt like it was meant to be. And the shotgun was great. We loved our shotgun. But we just have a little bit more space here in our new house. And we're both working from home now. So it's kind of nice to be able to go into another room, get some work done. I actually came into our bedroom today to record this because George It's a very loud phone talker. It's nervous you'd be able to hear him in the background the whole time. So
I love it. Well, the other question I always ask, or Steve and I ask at the end of our interviews with residents is, what is one like sort of tip or that you would tell somebody who's never been to Serenbe, who's coming down? What would you sort of say, oh, you've got to do this, or don't miss this thing?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. I don't know if I could narrow it down to one thing. I mean, I think I would put together an itinerary almost.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm like, I've had those days where I'm like, this is the perfect day where I'll go to the farmer's market on a Saturday and then kind of wander to the Daisy and grab a coffee and then wander to the shops and then like walk on the trails to go home. And it's just sort of like the perfect morning in a lot of ways. And yeah, I mean, I guess just sort of bringing it back to biophilia in a way, I never had a concept of that until I moved here. And it's something that I felt really instinctively, even before I was really familiar with the concept itself and sort of the science behind it. Like I just started spending more time here and walking on the trails and spending more time outside. And I would like notice how much better I felt when I was here. And then I would be sad when I had to be back in Atlanta. and then I started working here and started doing some work with the Biophilic Institute. And I was like, there you go.
Yeah.
It all makes sense.
It all comes together.
Yeah, I would say come on a Saturday morning, farmer's market, coffee, brunch, shopping. That's sort of a perfect morning.
I love it. All right. Well, thanks. Thanks so much, Katrina, for joining us. This has been great.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Katrina. So fun. You know, I'm so excited to just have you talk to us about like why we should go, what we should look forward to. And I love your enthusiasm because you're part of Serenbe. You live there. And I just, you know, getting to know you in the past year plus, I'm excited to see your excitement for why we need more biophilic solutions. So thanks for being a part of the team.
Thank you, Jennifer.
All right. Bye, guys. See you at the summit.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Serenbe Stories. New episodes are available on Mondays. Please follow us and leave us a 5-star review. And visit our website to learn more about guests, episodes, and everything Serenbe at serenbestories.com. This episode is supported by the Inn at Serenbe, nestled in the rolling countryside of the bucolic community of Serenbe, where guests can walk on the 15 miles of private trails through preserved forest land, the wildflower meadow, and the animal village. Relax at the pool, hot tub, or in rocking chairs on a wraparound porch. Play on the croquet lawn, grab a canoe, and jump on the in-ground trampoline. Connect with nature and each other, all while staying in a luxurious space at the Inn at Serenbe. Book your stay today at serenbeinn.com, S-E-R-E-N-B-E-I-N-N.com.